Welcome to Rambam on the Line. Today's shiur includes Perek Shiva Asar, Mehilchos Ishos, Chapter 17 of the Laws Concerning Marriage. Halacha Aleph, Paragraph 1. Mi shehaya nasui nashim rabos v'meis. One who is married to many women and dies. Kol shenises batchila kodemes litol ksubasa. Whoever he married first has priority in collecting the ksuba. Furthermore, none of the wives have a right to collect the ksuba without first giving an oath. What this refers to is that when the first wife collects her ksuba, she must give an oath to the second wife, because the second wife has a claim. Perhaps you have already collected the ksuba, and nothing is left for me to collect. So therefore you have to give me an oath that you have not yet taken anything. Likewise, the second wife would have to give an oath to the third, and the third to the fourth, for the same reason. Maybe there'd be nothing left over for them, since the first wife, or the second one, or the one who preceded the third or fourth, and so on, had already collected their ksubah. The latter one cannot collect anything except that which was left over and had not yet been collected by an earlier wife. Whatever is left over, the residual amount, can be collected by the latter wife. V'gamhi nishbas menotelos hashar, and also she, this last wife, has to give an oath, and she takes the rest. Now, the reason why she has to give an oath, even though she cannot be withholding anything from any other wife, because she's the last one in line, is due to the fact that it might be discovered that the property any one of the earlier three wives had collected was really stolen property, did not belong to the husband, in which case the owner would reclaim his property, and they would be left without anything. What they would do next is to go to the fourth wife and take away the property from her, because they have priority. The danger over here is that the fourth wife might have anticipated that, and in doing so had collected something else from the husband that the other wives don't know about, and neglect the field that she has, knowing that eventually it's going to be taken away from her and given to the other wives. Therefore, they have to administer an oath to her that she had not withheld anything from the husband's estate for herself. V'chein, im haya olav shtar chov, im haya hachov kodem, gova bal chov tchila. V'im haksuva kadma, gova ha'isha b'tchila, v'hanisha lebal chov. The same thing would happen. Instead of having a few wives, there is a creditor who is coming to collect money from the husband or from his estate. If the debt was incurred before the ksuba was written, it was dated before the ksuba, then of course the creditor would collect first. He would have first choice, priority. But if the ksuba was dated earlier, then the woman, the wife, would collect her debt first, and the rest would be left for the creditor. Halacha Beis, paragraph 2. Bamed dvarim amurim, when does the foregoing apply? Kishahaysa hakarka, shabo ligvos mimena knuyalo, bishas nisuyim ubishah shalava. Husha hadin nosein, shekol hakodem bashtar tchila, if the property that they are coming to collect, the wives and the creditor, was the property of the husband, he had acquired it at the time of the marriage and at the time that the debt was incurred, then the law states that whoever has an earlier date on his document, on his shtar, gets the first right to collect the property. Aval im nasa nashim zu acher zu v'lova bein kodem nesuin bein acher nesuin v'acha shenasa v'lova kana karka kulon cholkim ke'echad sheshibud kulon ke'echad ba. However, the Rambam says, if this man had married wives consecutively and he had borrowed money, whether it was before the marriage or after the marriage, and only after he had married these wives and after he had already borrowed the money, then he purchased property, they all split evenly. Because it is to be divided equally because their several mortgages are all of the same date. Shebishah shekana haya meshubed lakol ve'en kandin kadima, because at the time that he purchased the property, he was already pledged to all of them, and no rule of priority can be applied over here. This is only so when there's enough for all of them. If there's not enough, the creditor takes precedence to the wife, as we will learn shortly. Halacha Gimel, paragraph 3. V'chein im hayas man haksubos v'hashtaros kulam yom echad asha achas
b'makom shekosvin shas cholkin ke'echad. Likewise, if the date of the ksubas of the various ksubas of the various wives and the promissory notes of the creditors were all dated the same day, or even the same hour in a place where they do write the hours in these contracts, such as in Yerushalayim in Jerusalem, in this case they have to split evenly. They divide everything equally among themselves. She'ein sham kodem, because there is no one there who has priority. Ula'olam kol shekadam v'zacha b'metaltalim k'dei chovo o k'dei k'subasa ein motzin miyado she'ein din k'dima b'metaltalim. At all times, however, if one seizes movable objects, until now we were talking about real estate, but if someone seizes movable objects to the value of his claim or of the k'suba, they may not be repossessed from him or from her, because the rule of priority does not apply to movables. There is no mortgage on movable objects, and therefore no one could say that they have priority. Whoever seizes it is the one who keeps it. Halacha Dalet, paragraph 4. Misha gerish es ishto v'olov shtar chov u'bo bal chov v'ha'isha ligbos v'ha'yu lo moz v'karka k'dei ha'chov v'ha'ksuba bal chov notel moz v'ha'isha notelos ksubasa min ha'karka. One who divorces his wife, and one who also incurred a debt, and he has the responsibility, the obligation of repaying that debt. And now the creditor and the wife come to collect their debts, and the man had money and he had real estate, enough to pay for the debt and the ksuba. The creditor takes the money, because it was money that he lent him, and the wife takes the ksuba from the real estate. V'im ein lo ela karka, she'ein ba k'dei ligbo shneihem, v'lehoye ba din k'dima, nos nosa lebal chov. If, however, he only has real estate, and there is not enough of it in order for both of them, the wife and the creditor, to collect their debts, and there was no law of priority over here, for example, if the ksuba and the shtar, the promissory note, were written on the same day, or in any other similar circumstances, the balchov, the creditor, is given the money for his debt. V'im nishal isha klum, tito. V'im lav, tidacha mipnei balchov. If there's something left over for the wife, fine, then she will collect her ksuba. If not, she will be pushed away because of the creditor. He has priority. Shaharei bal chov hifsid v'hotzi me'osav v'ha'isha l'chaser davar. The reason for this is because the creditor had incurred a loss. He had given away his money, so he's entitled to get it back. Whereas the wife had not really been missing anything. She did not spend any money on her husband. Because the desire to get married for a woman is greater than the desire to get married for the husband. The way the Rambam puts it, and taken from the Talmud, should be translated more precisely as, for more than the man's desire to marry is the woman's desire to be married. And therefore, she didn't really give anything by getting married, whereas the creditor did give money, and therefore he's entitled to get his money back before the woman gets her ksuba. Halacha Hei, paragraph 5. V'chein misha meis, v'hiniach isha u'balchov, v'karka she'ein badin k'dima, ho'isha nidcheis v'prei balchov, hu'go v'chov v'tchila. Similarly, one who dies leaves a wife and a creditor, and he has real estate that is not enough, does not suffice for both of them, and there is no law of priority over here, such as in the case where both the ksuba and the shtar for the dead were written on the same day. The woman is pushed away in favor of the balchov, the creditor, and he will collect his debt first. Halacha Vav, paragraph 6. V'kivan shetiknu ha-ga'onim, shetikba ha-isha u-balchov min ha-metaltalin, v'hadavar yedua she'ein din kadima ba-metaltalin, im lo hiniach metaltalin k'dei liten l'shneihem nosim l'balchov kol chov v'tchila. V'im nisha l'isha masha titol b'ksubasa titol v'im lav tidachem. Once the Gaonim, the post-Talmudic rabbis, enacted that a woman, as well as a creditor, have the right to collect their debts from metaltalin, from movable objects, even of the estate of the father, of the property that now belongs to the orphans, and it is well known that there is no law of priority with regard to movable objects, as we already discussed. If the father, the husband, the debtor, did not leave movable objects enough for both of them, we give all of what he has to the creditor first. We pay the entire debt because he incurred a loss, he gave money. And if something is left over for the wife, for her ksuba, she's entitled to take that, and if not, she must yield for the creditor. Halacha Zayin, paragraph 7. Hayu ksuvim b'ksubasa nichsei tzom barzel. If the ksuba includes iron sheet property, remember before we learned that iron sheet property is property that belongs to the wife, that is now brought into the marriage and written in the ksuba, and in this case, the increase, the profits, and the losses are entirely the husband's, and she's entitled to get back whatever it is that she brought into the marriage. V'ta'ana she'avdu or she'lokchem habal, and then she argues that they were either lost or the husband had taken them for himself. Harihi b'nichsei tzom barzel she'lok ishar bali chovos. She, in regard to this iron sheep property, is like any other creditor. She then has to give an oath that she didn't take them herself, she didn't give them to her husband, and she didn't forego or waive her rights to them. And then she could divide that property evenly with all the other creditors, because she is just like a creditor herself. And it would not be considered like a ksuba, like the debt that the husband owes to a wife, that is considered to be the basic part or the supplementary part of the ksuba. The property, tzom barzel, even though they're written in the ksuba, they're included, are really a separate and distinct type of obligation. They are like any other debt. Halacha ches, paragraph 8. Misha meis, o gerish, v'yesh lo nashim rabos, v'ein sham din kedima, v'ein lo kedei kol haksubos, ketzit hen cholkos. One who dies or divorces his wives, and he has many wives, and there is no law of priority, because they were all married on the same day, and therefore the dates of the ksuba are all the same. Now, what do we do in this case? He doesn't have enough to satisfy all the ksubos. How do they divide it? Roim im kishi chalik hamaman al minyan hanashim yagia lapchusa shebehen kedei ksubasa opachos cholkos b'shaveh. We look at it this way. We see if the money divided into as many equal shares as there are wives would suffice to pay the wife whose ksuba bears the lowest figure enough to cover that figure or less, they should share the money equally among all of the wives. V'im ha'yu ha'mamun yoser al zeh, if the money was more than that, chol k'mimenu k'dei she'yagia l'pchusa shebehen k'shir k'subasa, then we divide it in such a way that the one who has the least amount in her k'suba should get the amount of her k'suba. V'cholzros v'cholkos es ha'mosar bein ha'nasaros al derech harishon, and then they go back and they divide the residual amount, the surplus, among the rest of the wives in the same manner as it was done in the first instance. Ketzad, how do we do this? Misha haya nasi arba nashim, one who was married to four wives. Ksubasa sharishana arba meos. Let's suppose that the ksuba of the first wife was 400. Bishal shnia shlosh meos, the second one was 300. Bishal shlishis masayim, the third one had a ksuba of 200. Bishal revius mea, and the fourth wife had a ksuba of 100. Ninta hakol elef, total amount is 1,000. V'gerish kulin omeis, and he divorces all of them or he dies. Im hiniach arba meos opachos, cholkos b'shava, v'chol achas notelis mea opachos. If he left 400 zuz, or less than that, they all divide evenly, each one takes 100 or less than 100. That is, of course, if he leaves less than 400, then each one takes less than 100. Hiniach shmona meos, if he left 800 zuz, im techalak bein kulam b'shava, nimtis hervias notelis masayim, v'harei ein b'ksubasa elameya. If you were divided evenly, it wouldn't be fair, because then the fourth one would take 200, and her ksuba only gives her 100. She's not entitled to take more than 100. Eliketzet osin, how do we do this? Lokhen arba meya zuz, v'cholken osin b'neim b'shava meya meya, nimtis hervias not l'kadei ksubasa v'holchala. We take 400 zuz out of the 800, we divide it among them evenly, we give each one 100. Consequently, the fourth wife takes the amount of her ksuba, the 100 that she's entitled to, and then she departs. She's out of the picture now. Nishar kan arba meya zuz v'shalosh nashim. Shebiyad kol achas mishloshtan meya zuz. Now we have 400 zuz left over and three wives, and each one of them, of the three wives, has 100 zuz. What do we do now? In tachla ka'arba meos ben shloshtem b'shava, nimtza ha'shlish is notelos masayim u'shloshim v'shalosh u'shlish, v'harei ein b'ksubasa elu masayim, If we will divide the remaining 400 among the three evenly, then the result would be that the third wife would take 233 1/3. But her ksuba only entitles her to 200. Lefichach lokhin me'arba ha'meos shlosh me'os, v'cholkin me'en shloshtem b'shava. Shenimtzis ha'shlishi shenot l'masayim shalah v'holchala. Therefore, we take out of the 400, 300. We divide the 300 among the three remaining wives evenly. Consequently, the third wife now has taken her full 200, and she could now depart, because she had 100 before, and she's going to get 100 now. Nishar kan me'a ushtei nashim. Now we have 100 left and two wives. Cholkin asameya b'shava, bein rishona ushniya. We divide it evenly among the first two wives. Nimtza b'yad ha-rishona masayim b'chamishim, v'chein b'yad ha-shniya. The first wife has 250, and so too the second one. V'nimtza b'yad ha-shlishis masayim, u'b'yad ha-raviyas me'a. Now the third wife, we already said, has 200, and the fourth one has 100. V'al derech zu cholkos le'olam afilo hein me'a. And we follow this procedure. We keep on going. If there are more than four wives or more money, even if there are 100 wives, we follow this procedure so that the one who has the least doesn't get more than what she's entitled to. She might get less, but not more. Halacha test, paragraph 9. He'orev le'isha b'ksubasa, afal pisha kanam yado, eino chayev l'shalim. A person who guarantees the ksuba for a woman, he says to her that if your husband will not pay the ksuba, I will pay it for you, even though they even went through a kinyan. They made an act, performed an act, that demonstrates their willingness to go through with this transaction. He's not obligated to pay for the ksuba. The reason for this is, shemitzvah asa, v'harei lo chasra klum, because he was really doing a mitzvah. He really wanted that these two people should get married, and it was because of the guarantee that he made, that he would pay the ksuba, that they consented to this marriage. But she's not missing anything. She didn't lose anything as a result of this guarantee. Therefore, he's not obligated to pay. Ve'im arev shel ksubas benohu v'kana miyado chayev l'shalim sheha'av beglal beno mishabed atzmo v'gomer umakna. If, however, this man becomes a guarantor for his son's ksuba, and he validates this promise with a kinyan, with a symbolic act of barter, he is liable for payment, because a father readily obligates himself for his son. And when he makes the promise, he is resolved to make it good. In other words, when any stranger makes this guarantee, he doesn't really want to pay for the ksuba, he just wants to do the mitzvah of getting these two people to get married. But when a father does it for his son, he is 100% sincere about it, and he really wants to guarantee the payment of the ksuba. V'kablon shel ksuba chayev l'shalem afa pi shelo kana miyado. However, a kablon of a ksuba, which the Rambam will soon explain, is liable for payment even if he had not performed a kinyan, the symbolic act that demonstrates the willingness to go through with his commitment. Now the question is, v'ezahu kablon, what is a kablon? Literally, it means someone who accepts upon himself to do something. In what way is that different than the average guarantor? The Rambam answers, Zeh she'amar le'isha, hinasi lezeh, v'ani nosin ksuba zu. This is one who says to the woman, marry so-and-so, and I will pay the ksuba. This is different than the case of the guarantor, because here he doesn't say, I will guarantee it, he says, I shall give it. The difference being is that in the case of an arev, the guarantor, normally in the case of a loan, is only responsible for payment if the debtor does not pay. However, in the case of a kablon, the creditor can go to either the debtor or he can go to the one who guaranteed the loan. Therefore, in this case, the case of the wife, since the kablon accepts responsibility for the payment of the ksuba directly, and not only in the event the husband doesn't pay for it, therefore, the kablon is responsible for payment. However, the Rambam continues, Avlim amr la hareini arev ksubazu, or ani perei ksubazu, ani chayev bo kiyotza baze potter, el imkein haya aviv. If, however, the kablon, the one who guarantees, says to her, I will be a guarantor for this ksuba, or I will settle this ksuba, or I will be liable for it, or uses a similar expression, he is not obligated to pay it, unless he is the husband's father. Hamagarish is ishto yadirena hanoa, v'achakach tiparak subasam in hakablon omi aviv im haya arev, shema yachzirena v'nimtso osin kenunya on the chasav shalzeh. Because of this possibility, that the guarantor would have to pay the ksuba, the Rambam makes the following statement. Hamagarish is ishto yadirena hanoa. One who divorces his wife must make a vow that he is not to derive any benefit from his wife. And only then could she collect her ksuba from the kablon or from the father if he was the guarantor. And the reason for this is there's a danger lest the husband remarry his divorced wife, and the effect of that would be that they might have conspired against the property of this guarantor. They wanted to get his money, so they made this conspiracy that she will be divorced from the husband, she will claim her ksuba from this person, and then remarry and split the proceeds with her husband. In order to prevent that, he must make this vow that he will not derive any benefit from her, which means he can never remarry her. Halacha Yud, paragraph 10. V'chein ha-magdish nechasav, v'geris is ishto, the same law would apply for someone who donates his property to the Beis Hamikdash, to the property of the Holy Temple. He renders his property holy, and then divorces his wife. The husband must make a vow not to derive any benefit from his wife, and only then should she recover the ksuba from the person who has redeemed the property from the temple. The reason here is the same, as the Rambam continues, Shema yasu knunya ala hegdish, lest the couple were conspiring to defraud the property of the temple. Avul hamagaris is ishto, ubo litrof min halakuchos, ein mechayven osa lahadira, elanishbasu tarefis. However, one who divorces his wife, and she comes to collect her ksuba from the people who bought his property, he is not obligated to make the vow not to derive any benefit from her. She can just take an oath in court that she did not withhold any of the property of the husband, and she can collect her ksuba. V'imra tisa tazel abayla. And if she so desires, she can go back to her husband. Shekvar yadu halakuchas, sheyesh olav ksubas isha. V'heim hefsidu al atzmam, shalakhu nechasim shetacha shibuda. The reason why this is different than the case of Hegdish or the case of the Kablon is because these people who purchased the property, they knew quite well that there was a lien on the property. The property was mortgaged for the ksuba of this woman. So they brought upon themselves the loss because they bought property that had been mortgaged. They had to anticipate that this might happen, that they might lose the property. Therefore, we do not require the husband to make that vow. Halacha Yud Aleph, paragraph 11. Habal shemacha nechasav, v'achakach kasva ishto lalokeach, din udvarim ein li imcha, v'hiskimo lamaisav. If a man sells his property, then his wife writes a document to the purchaser saying, I have no claim whatsoever against you. And thereby she is consenting to her husband's act, that she doesn't mind the fact that he sold property that was mortgaged for her ksuba. Av al pi shekanu mimena harezo terefes. Even though the consent of this wife, the tacit consent, was made even stronger, was validated by a kinyan, a symbolic act of barter, nevertheless, she can still seize her ksuba from the purchaser. Why is that? The answer is, shelo kasvalo elish lo tia beino lebein baila katata. Because the only reason that she wrote this to this purchaser could have been to prevent a quarrel between herself and her husband. V'yesh lo lomar nachas ruach hasisa lebaili. And she may therefore say, I did it merely to afford satisfaction to my husband. I wanted him to feel good. But I did not really want to waive my right to collect the ksuba. However, if the order is reversed, first they made the kinyan, they went through this symbolic act of barter from the woman, the purchasers did this with the wife, that she should not have any claim against this property, and then the husband sold it, then she is not entitled to collect the ksuba from this property. Because she can't say, I was doing this as a favor to my husband, because she did this before the husband even sold the property. The Rambam explains that the same thing would apply if the husband sells his property, and afterwards he says to his wife that she should write this to the purchaser, that I have no business with you, and I will not collect anything from your property, and she refuses to write that. She does not consent to his action, and then the sale was invalidated because of this very reason. She didn't want to sign that or write this letter, so that was the end of the sale. Then the husband then goes back again and sells the property to some other person, whether it's that same property or some other field, some other property, and after he sells it, she then consents to his actions, and she goes through the kinyan, the act of acquisition, the symbolic act, that she does not have any claim to this field. She then could not go back and seize this field for her ksuba, because she can't say now, I was just doing this to bring satisfaction to my husband, inasmuch as at the first sale, to which she did not consent, she did not follow her husband's wishes. How could she say now that she wants to just give her husband satisfaction? Halacha Yud Beis, paragraph 12. Mi shehayu l'shtei nashim, one who has been married to two wives, u'machar sadehu, and he sells his field, v'kanu miyad harishona, and the purchasers made this kinyan, this symbolic act, from the first wife, she'ein la shibud al sadazu, that she has no claim to this field, ve'ena terefes osa min halakeach, and she will not collect it or seize it from the purchaser. V'hoye kinyan hamoil, she'ena yechola liton bo nachasru achasisu labayli, and it must be a type of a kinyan that is effective in this case, such as the case that we had before, where she made the kinyan before the husband sold the property, in which case she cannot claim that I was just doing this to afford satisfaction to my husband. V'achakach meis habal o gerishtein, then the husband dies or divorces both wives. Now here's an interesting halacha. Ashniya motzia miyad halakeach. The second wife may seize the property from the purchaser. Shaharei lo kanu miyad halakeach. They never made the kinyan, the act of acquisition, from the purchaser. It was only the first wife, v'harishona, but then the first wife motzia miyad hashniya. She then could seize the property and take it away from the first wife. Mipnei shehi kadma v'lo hasira shibuda elo miyad halakeach, because she takes precedence to the second wife, and she never waived her right to collect except from the purchaser, not from the other wife. Now, this is not the end of it. Now, when the field goes back to the first wife, the purchaser could then go to the first wife and seize it from her, because she made the kinyan with him, with his purchaser. But then once it gets to the purchaser, the second wife could then collect it from the purchaser, v'chozos chalila, and it goes back in circles. Once the second wife has it, the first wife can get it from the second, then the purchaser can get it from the first, and it keeps on going back in circles. So what do you do here? Achiyasu pshara b'neim. This goes on and on until they make some type of a compromise. Halacha Yud Gimel, paragraph 13. Almana bein min arsuin, bein min ha'erisin, nishbas u'mecheres mikarka baila, v'nefras ksubasa, bein bebezdin mumchin, Bein bebezdin she'ena mumchin. A woman who became a widow, whether she is widowed from the marriage or whether she is a widow from the betrothal, they never had the wedding, she must give an oath. The oath is that her husband did not leave her anything, and she can sell her husband's real estate, her husband's property, and she gets her ksuba from that estate. This can be done whether in a professional court or even in a bezdin, a court that does not have professional judges. The reason for this is that the husband does not want his wife to have to degrade herself to go to court, and he's satisfied even with this type of a court. However, the Rambam qualifies the statement by saying, "Vahu sheyu hashlosha hanashim nemanim v'yodim b'shumas hakarka." When are these judges who are not professionals qualified if they are trustworthy and they know how to assess the value of real estate. V'achrayas hamecher al nichsei yesomim. The property of the orphans will guarantee the sale. That means that if the field turns out to be a stolen field, and then the victim of the theft will then take it away from the purchaser, so what happens then? The purchaser will then go to the orphans, the ones who inherited the widow's husband's estate, and collect from them. Aval hagrusha lo timker elo bebezdin mumchen. However, a divorcee may not sell the property of her husband unless it's in a professional court. That is, a court composed of experts. V'chol hamecheres bebezdin lo timker elo b'hachraza. Whoever sells property through the courts must only sell it by making announcements. That means they have to announce in public how much this field is assessed to be worth and why they're going to sell it. In the subsequent laws concerning loans, it will be explained how the court is supposed to sell the property. However, if one sells a property, the woman sells the property not through the court, she does not have to make the announcements, the prior announcements. The reason for this is that when the courts make a mistake in the sale and they sell it for less than its true value, the sale is valid. Therefore, in order to guarantee and to ensure that there will not be any loss, there has to be announced ahead of time to make sure that the assessment is correct. But when the widow sells it not in the presence of the court, even if the mistake in the sale is a very insignificant one, the sale is invalid because the orphans don't have to lose as a result of her mistake. Therefore, there's no need to make this prior announcement because they can always retrieve their loss in a later time. Nevertheless, she still requires at least three people, though they're not professional judges, but three trustworthy people who happen to know something about the assessment and the evaluation of real estate. Halacha Yudala, paragraph 14. Almana shemachra karka b'ksubasa bein lebein atzma, a widow who sells the real estate for her ksuba, and she does it by herself. They were not even present, the three non-professional judges that we spoke about before. Imachra shava b'shava michra kayim. If she sold the property for its proper value, there were no mistakes, then the sale is valid. V'nishba shvuas almana acha shemachra, and she must then give the widow's vow, the vow that was mentioned in an earlier chapter, that she did not withhold any of her husband's property, and this vow must be made after the sale. However, the Rambam continues, V'husha macha la'achar. This is true only if she sold it to some other person. Alim shama la'atzma lo asasa klum v'afilo hechriza. If, however, she assessed the land for sale to herself, her act is totally invalid. Even if she had made a prior announcement of the sale, it is invalid. That means that if the orphans would like to give her money instead and get back their property, they can always do so. Halacha Tezvah 15. Ha'isik subasa masayim. U'machra shava meya b'masayim, u'shava masayim b'meya, niskablu ksubasa v'ein la klum. If her ksuba was for 200, and she sold a field that was worth 100 for 200, or a field that was worth 200 for 100, in either case, she has received payment of her ksuba, and she has no further claim. Ubilvad shetishava shvuas almana, provided that she gives the oath of the widow, that is, that she did not withhold any property from her husband's estate. Ha'isik subasa meya, however, if the ksuba was 100, umachra shava meya v'dinir b'meya, michra batal, and she sold property that was worth 100 plus 1 dinar for 100, the sale is invalid, because she had no right to sell the field that was worth 101 for 100. She's not entitled to that extra one. In the preceding case, she's entitled to 200. But here she's only entitled to 100. Who gave her the right to sell that extra dinar? Therefore, the sale is invalid. And this is true even if she says, I will return that dinar to the heirs. That does not help because the whole sale was invalid in the first place. Halacha Tezayin, paragraph 16. Ha'isik subasa arba meya zuz. This is a variation of the preceding halacha. If her ksuba was for 400 zuz, it had the supplementary amount as well as the basic amount, and then she sells one person for 100, another person for 100, and those two sales were for property that was worth 100, and she got 100. But for the latter
person, the last person, she sold property worth 100 and won for 100. The last sale is invalid because she had no right to sell that extra one, but all the others are valid. In other words, in this case, she sold as many people for 100 up to the number 400. Now, when the last person who she sells 101, that goes beyond the amount of the ksuba that she's entitled to. That's 401. So the last sale is invalid, but the preceding ones are valid. Halacha Yud Zayin, 17. Yesh le'isha limkor ksubasa alitlan b'matana. The wife has the right to sell her ksuba or to give it as a gift to someone. Im meis habal or gersha, yav halavi yital. And if the husband dies or divorces her, then that person to whom she had sold the ksuba or given it as a gift will come and collect the ksuba. If, however, the wife dies in the lifetime of her husband, so there was never a chance of collecting ksuba, or before she gives the oath, in which case she cannot collect the ksuba, he has nothing. He has no claim whatsoever because there was never anything that gave him the privilege to collect the ksuba, because she was not privileged to collect the ksuba, and this man who purchased the right lost his money. Halacha Yudches, paragraph 18. Haresha machra miksas ksubasa. O mishkana miksas ksubasa. O nasna la'achar miksas ksubasa. If a woman sold part of her ksuba, or pledged part of it, or has given part of it as a gift to another person, mocheres mikarka baila, besig bahashar bein bebezdin mumchin, bein beshloshen emanim. She then could sell her husband's estate, her husband's land, and she could collect the rest, the part that she did not sell or give to others, whether it's in the court of professionals, whether it's just three trustworthy people. Umecheres luksubasa afilu pamim rabos. The wife may make such sales of her husband's property to collect her ksuba even many times over. Bein bebezdin, bein beshloshen emanim, v'yodim shumas hakarka, whether it's done in a professional court, or whether by three trustworthy people who know how to assess land. There is no limit to the number of times she can make these sales to make up for the total amount of the ksuba, besides the amount that she sold. Halacha Yutes, 19. Hamacheres ksubasa, bein lacherim, bein labaila, lo avda shar tnoi ksuba. One who sells her ksuba, whether she sells it to others, whether she sells it to her husband, so that if he dies or divorces her, she would not be able to collect the ksuba, she does not lose all the other conditions that are attached to the ksuba. For example, the condition that requires the husband to pay her doctor bills, to ransom her, and all the other things that we learned about earlier in chapter 12. V'im hayu l'bein zachar, yorosh k'neged haksuba hazo sh'nimkura m'nichsei aviv, yosar al-chelko k'din t'nai zeh. Consequently, if this woman has a male child, he inherits out of his father's property over and above his share in it as much as is his due from the ksuba that was sold, in accordance with that condition. One of the conditions of the ksuba is that if this couple has a male child and the husband had other children from another wife, although they both inherit the husband's estate, the male child takes the first pick. In other words, he will have the right to inherit the ksuba of the mother. And therefore, he still inherits the amount of the ksuba, and only then, after he collects the ksuba, does he share equally in the estate of the father with the other brothers, with his half-brothers. This condition of the ksuba remains intact. More of this condition will be discussed in the subsequent chapter, chapter 19. Aval ha-mocheles ksubasa labayla ibda kol tanai ksubasa. However, if the wife did not sell her ksuba to her husband, but she waived the ksuba, she has lost all the conditions of the ksuba, and she cannot even claim sustenance. He does not even have to feed her. There's some question whether that means even in his lifetime, or that means only after he dies. From the Rambam's wording, it appears that even in his lifetime, she doesn't have a right to claim food from him. According to Rashi, it's only after she becomes a widow that she is not entitled to the food. The reason for the distinction of selling and waiving the ksuba is given that in the case of selling, it could be she was forced into it because she needed the cash. But in the case of waiving it, that means she did not really care about the ksuba. So since she does not have any care about the ksuba, she loses all the rights and the privileges that are contained within the ksuba. The Rambam then explains, "Mocheles ksubasa einet tzricha kinyan v'lo edim." One who waives the right of the ksuba does not have to do so with a kinyan, with a symbolic act
of barter, neither do we have to have witnesses present, just as the law is with regard to all other cases where one waives his rights, where there is no need for witnesses, nor the need of a kinyan. Words alone are sufficient. However, this is provided that the declaration expresses firm resolution. And that these words should not be couched in jocular, humorous, or ambiguous terms, but in terms denoting a resolute frame of mind. Otherwise, we do not take them seriously. But when a person waives their rights to financial matters, and it's clear that it was not a joke or ambiguous, it was serious, that is valid even without a kinyan and even without witnesses. With this, the Rambam concludes Perik Shiva Asar Mehilchos Ishus, chapter 17 of the laws concerning marriage.